Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Stu Whiffin, sitting opposite me. Well, you know who's sitting opposite me. It's only Blake Harrison. How are you, my friend?
Very good, mate. Very good. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. I mean, should we be very, very British? It's hot, isn't it?
Oh, it's very hot. You're in a vest.
I know. I literally took the hanky off the top of my head before we pressed record. Just thought I'd go on.
No, it sounds like you're about to just shout yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, and then just like run around Nakatomi Plaza.
Oh, shout out the greatest Christmas film. Okay, well, we're here today to discuss UFC 278, Usman versus Edwards 2. But before we get on to a great card of fights, we're going to have a little chat about what's just happened. We're recording this on the morning of the 14th. And, well, this weekend's seen a lot of action in PFL, in Cage Warriors. And obviously, we'll start by maybe casting our eyes over a couple of the fights from last night's UFC headlined. Should we kick things off with Chito versus Dom?
Let's do that. I mean,
You look sad, mate.
No, I'm not sad at all.
The minute I said about Chito Dom, like, your face was like, oh, I don't know.
It was more just a Jesus Christ. That was a bad knockout, wasn't it?
I mean, I've not seen him since, but when I watched it on the replay, it looked like it was on his nose, and it looked like it must have just absolutely smashed his nose to bits. I've not seen any sort of footage anywhere or any pictures of him sort of anytime after. Have you?
I haven't, but I feel like it looks like his nose just changes shape.
Yeah, I thought that.
Chito kicked it. It wasn't maybe as devastating to the nose as MVP on Anderson back in Bellator a little while ago. That kind of left high kick just kind of crushed Anderson's nose. But the impact through knocking his brain, all that stuff, he was totally out of it. He was out of it. It was a good stoppage. It was... Yeah, I mean, that was... He just fell, didn't he? Like, just went rigid and fell like a tree, and...
I had that feeling. And first of all, I thought Dom won the first probably three rounds. I thought he looked incredible. You could see he was starting to slow down as the rounds, you know... I mean, he's no spring chicken, Dom, but I thought he looked amazing. And I thought Chito was struggling to get his range, to get his shots off. But when he did get any shot off, the results were devastating. Straight away, they're plonking Dom on his butt. And, I mean, he was quick to get back up. And every time he'd get back up throwing. And I thought, I did for a moment think this could be Dom's night here. Like, he's looking really good. His movement is never to be questioned. And I didn't think at any point he was ever going to knock out Chito. But I thought the barrages of shots, that kind of Vitor style right across the octagon, he'd done that so many times. It looked great. And it felt like he didn't seem too uncomfortable when it went to ground. You know, obviously he got a takedown as well. But it just felt like the gun was cocked, and at some point he was going to just land something that was going to close the party. I didn't think it was going to be a head kick. And oh my God, when that kick dropped, it was like, well, that's that then, isn't it? And yeah, I thought it was an absolutely great fight.
Yeah. I tell you who did see that it was going to be that head kick was Eric Nixick, the head coach. Is he a syndicate head coach, Eric Nixick, who does, he trains Francis Ngannou along with many other really good fighters. But he tweeted out like minutes before that Dom keeps dipping his head to the right, and if Cheeto lands a kick, it's game over. And it happened like a minute or two later or something like that. So good on Eric Nixick there, he called it. Yeah, I gave the first two rounds to Dom. Despite the fact that he was sat on his ass in that first round, I thought the accumulation of strikes outweighed in damage Cheeto's kind of one punch where he sat him down. Third round, I think I gave it to Cheeto. It was tight, but I think I gave it to Cheeto, and you could see that he was coming back because he put him on his butt again in that round, and Dom landed less. So I was like, okay, that one strike outweighs it for me in damage. And then, Jesus, that fourth round, man, that head kick was just switched him off. And as you say, I thought Dom looked great. Yeah. I don't think, I'm not looking at that fight and going, Dom needs to hang up the gloves.
Unless no way.
But I do think Dom's not getting a title shot ever again.
No, three round fight, he would have won that.
Yeah, and if he, you know, this again, so Cheeto, he's just got, the scary thing about Cheeto is he seems to be totally patient. He's able to take a lot of damage and it doesn't bother him. He's a fucking Terminator. And when he hits you, it's with real intent. And you can be peppering him with strikes for the best part of 4.5 minutes. And he just needs one. And all the work you've done can be undone by that one strike that he lands. And he doesn't have a mark on him, really.
He didn't look tired either.
He doesn't look tired because he's conserving his energy. He's playing this game that I feel like I haven't seen enough before. Like maybe it's a bit almost Yoel Romero-like, where he's just like, he's just sitting and will then just explode. And then he'll sit for like a minute or two and just ride it out and then explode.
And Cheeto's it's the complete opposite to what Dom does, though, isn't it? That's the thing. Dom's mouth was open in the second round. It's because he doesn't stop moving. And, you know, that is, as you enter into the sort of twilight years of your career, it's going to get harder to do that. And any time he did stop or get into that range, it wasn't even big shots being thrown, but they were, like, plonking him down. And, absolutely. I think he just... he fights a very smart fight. I mean, I do think that it might have been second round, was it? His corner said, right, you're two down.
Yep.
You know, you've got to start doing something there. And he listened, and obviously, you know, as you scored it, the third to him, and then the fourth, you know, I think it was as DC might have said something like, Cheeto's really got to kind of make a mark and do something, and then, boom, it literally happened at that point. Yeah. And that's all she wrote.
Yeah, I mean... What's the bantamweight division has got a lot of action coming up over the next few weeks and months. So we'll talk about it on this fight. We've got Aldo versus Mrab Dervishvili on the UFC 278 card. I think, is it UFC 280? Is Sterling and TJ also, is it also Jan and Sean O'Malley on that same card? That card's going to be mental. Ooh. Oh, man.
What a division.
What a division. But so, in terms of what's next for Cheeto, I think it's really, it does depend on what happens next. Because if Sean O'Malley beats Peter Yan, they're going to give O'Malley the title shot because he's so popular. He's going to go straight to a title shot if he beats Yan. No question in my mind. If TJ... If Mrab beats Aldo and TJ beats Sterling, you could potentially do that fight because Merab and Aljamain Sterling are such close friends, they'll never fight each other. And then what was the other bantamweight fight in there?
TJ versus Sterling.
If Sterling wins and if Sterling wins and Aldo wins, I think you could make that fight very easily because Aldo's such a name. If Sterling wins and Merab wins, is that where Chito maybe gets his shot if Yarn also beats O'Malley?
I'd love a bit of that.
Oh, mate. But there's loads of... Like, Aldo's beaten Chito. So if Aldo wins, he's in front of Chito in the queue. And rightfully so, I think. But in terms of Chito, you could throw him in against Sean O'Malley again. I'd watch that fight. You could throw him in against Sterling, against TJ Dillashaw. All of them are great because Chito is excited. He's becoming the new guy now that you go, you can't miss a Chito fight. You can't. Mm. Look what he did to Frankie Edgar. Look what he did to Rob Font. Look what he's just did to Dominic Cruz. Like, this is all really, really impressive in a division that is absolutely stacked. So, yeah, I don't know what's next for Chito. I don't think he'll get a title shot next. I think he'll probably end up having to win one more. But he'll be fighting a guy that is, you know...
He'll be fighting in that mix.
Yeah, he'll be fighting a TJ. Or if Sterling's no longer the champ, Sterling. Or maybe O'Malley again, or Peter Yarn. He'll be fighting one of those top guys where you go, right, if Chito wins this one, title shot.
Yeah, 100%. Right, what else do you want to talk about last night? Because I got a message from you.
Yeah, we have to. To be honest, this is one of those cards last night where I was kind of like, I am interested, very, very interested in the main event. And other than that, shout out to Angela Hill. Got a great win against Lupi Gudenez. Great. We're always big fans of anyone that's come on our show. So big props to Angela Hill. And it was great to see her winning that catchweight fight. And she put on a great performance. There were some cracking fights last night.
Hometown as well.
Yes. Right. But when you looked at the card on paper, you were kind of going, other than the main event, there's not a huge amount going on here. And then there was, I can't remember their names. Yasmin Jarigue and Yasmin Lucido, I want to say something like that. They were both making their UFC debuts at strawweight. That was a cracking fight.
Yeah.
But then out of nowhere, the co-main event came along and just went, all you other great fights, you've got nothing on us. Mm. Nate Landwehr and David Onama. What a scrap that. I mean, it became great because both of their cardios went very quickly, but it was still a really great scrap to watch.
And the cardio went because they just went at it. And Onama looked terrifying in that first few minutes. It was like, oh dear, this ain't going to go on for long. And I think I stopped saying this ain't going to go on for long probably halfway through the third round because it was just ridiculous. It was one of the fights of the year by a mile, if not the fight of the year. Onama.
That's big talk.
Well,
Yuri Glover? Come on.
Yeah, maybe.
Even Burn Shamaev. But...
Yeah. Like,
don't get me wrong. I reckon it'll make a top five.
100%. Like, I didn't know huge amounts about either of these fighters. I'm not going to lie. Onama's resilience was insane. Like, the amount of times you just thought, right, well, he's done for. And then he just comes out of it. Like, he'll either get out and get up, or he'd just take a barrage of knees. And then he'd literally just start, like, throwing serious bombs again. It was just like watching a Rocky film. I loved it. And it finished with a Rocky moment as well. Like, he's literally calling for his wife. I just loved it. It was everything you want from a fight. And the fact that I didn't know loads about each of these fighters, and like you, I wasn't expecting much from the undercard. It's not, you know, when you looked at it on paper, it was like, wow, there's not many, you know, recognisable names or ranked fighters in here. So, I don't know. And I think because I was, went in it quite unassuming, I was just absolutely blown away by what I got there. Amazing fight. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, I have to say, Nate Landwehr's game plan in like the third round was strange because he would, I think he seemed to have the wrestling advantage, but whenever Anama was down for long, Nate Landwehr would just stand up and gesture to the crowd as if to say, yeah, come on, let's do it. La, la, la. I mean, maybe I'm assuming they got fight of the night. They had to.
Yeah, he did.
So, I mean, maybe that was a way of him getting an extra 50 Gs. Mm. But I was like, just stay down there and hit him. You'll get a finish.
Mm. I want to talk about the 50 Gs thing a little later. When we get on to 278, I need to talk about the 50 Gs as well.
All right, then I'll try
something that I've seen this week about that.
Is there anything more you want to say about last night's UFC?
Shout out to Nunes retiring, leaving the mitts in the octagon to go and to have more children. And yeah, beautiful. So I've not had a chance to catch up on Cage Warriors yet. I know that three of our former guests were fighting on that card. Oben Elliott, Matt Bonner, and the champ, Sam Creasy. Tell me what I missed.
So, I mean, I was finding it difficult because I was trying to watch Cage Warriors and the PFL at the same time, which is never easy to do. But
you need Michael Bisping eye. You need to be able to put like one eye to one side and one the other on two TVs.
Oh man. I mean, Oben Elliott versus Matt Bonner. It was bittersweet. Because, you know, we've said this before on the show. We love both those guys. We think they're both really great guys. And we didn't want to see either of them lose. But it was the night of the hometown boy. It was the night of the Welsh gangster. Oben Elliott, for me, seemed to have way too much speed for Matt Bonner. I mean, Oben Elliott used to be a lightweight. Matt Bonner's coming down from middleweight. So there was a size discrepancy there. But I think what played in Oben Elliott's favour was he had quite a distinctive speed advantage over Matt Bonner, and he also had a wrestling advantage. And as much as weight can
What, over Matt Bonner?
Did I say weight advantage?
Oh, I thought you said ground
wrestling.
Advantage.
Wrestling. Oh, yeah, he had a wrestling advantage. Yeah. His wrestling was superior to Matt Bonner's. I mean, Matt predominantly, I guess, is more of a striker, really, Muay Thai background. I think Oban is someone that boxes and wrestles. He put Bonner on his ass a lot in that fight, and then when Bonner was able to get to his feet, the speed advantage of Elliott, I think, seemed to take over, and he could win some of the striking battles for a long enough period of time to instigate the next clinch and take down and stuff like that. So yeah, that's kind of how that fight went.
Tough night for Matt, but I mean, I think Oben was coming off a loss as well, wasn't he? So I think
he lost to Flaminas. So it's good for him to now get a good win at 170. I don't know how much the weight cut would have affected Matt. It's such a shame that there's such a big discrepancy in weight between like welterweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, and all those kind of. It's a shame there's not like more of a buff. I feel like there should be like probably a weight division every 10 pounds, like with the lower weight classes. But, and because it's difficult for some people when they're sort of between weight classes, like I think Matt Bonner probably is. Commiserations to Matt Bonner, but congratulations to Oben Elliott.
Absolutely. Now, I did see the finish by the Samurai and it looked impressive.
It was really impressive. It came really, really quickly. I think, did he clip him with a right hand and then very quickly went into the guillotine? And it was that same guillotine that he got Luke Shanks with before. Mm-hmm. That real kind of like high elbow position on the guillotine. And it was over in less than a minute, I think it was.
No sweat involved there, so it's a nice tight.
Exactly, yeah. And I really was pleased for Sam Creasy. You know, he's had a difficult time with, you know, he's lost to Luke Shanks, but Luke Shanks missed weight. So Sam's still the champ, even though he's been beaten. It's a difficult thing. So for him to finally defend that belt.
Yeah.
Legitimately, no gripes, no questions asked. And to do it in real style as well.
Yeah.
Is a great thing for Sam Creasy. I hope it's really good for his confidence, and hopefully he can maybe even go on a little run here that might even lead him to the UFC or something. I think, you know, he's been around a while now, Sam Creasy, and yeah, it'll be great to just see him do well, go on a little run or something. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, he was a proper gentleman, he was. Yeah, great stuff. What's been happening in PFL?
PFL's been absolutely batshit crazy because they've just had such bad luck with stuff. So out of in the heavyweights last night, three of them didn't officially make it to the semi-finals. They were replacements, which is gutting. Bruno Capoloza, who was the champ 2 years running, had to pull out through injury, and Mateusz Scheffel came in. Okay, fair enough, no problem. He fought Antdelia. No, he came in and fought one Adams last night, but Adams was a replacement for Goltsov because Goltsov had visa issues. Sorry, I think I've said this wrong. I think there was two replacements in the heavyweight division, one because Capoloza was injured and one because Goltsov couldn't get his visa. And then in the welterweight division, Rory McDonald was supposed to fight Umalatov, who was like undefeated, really highly touted prospect. He had visa issues, and in stepped Delano Taylor. So they had, out of, what would it have been, four semi-final fights last night, at least three replacements. I mean, it's been it's been a real pain in the ass for him. I don't know what.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Why the visa things? Like, what? Surely there was long enough to get that sorted. I don't know. But the visa things is a real difficult one because it's one thing to be injured. For like Bruno Capoloza to be injured and go, oh shit, I'm injured. The chance of me winning $1 million is gone because I've got an injury. That's one thing. But when you're fit and you're healthy and you've earned the right to fight in the semi-final and then go on to $1 million, and for someone like Umalatov to fight Rory McDonald, an absolute legend, and then go and fight for $1 million, for that to be taken away from you because of visa issues, that is fucking heartbreaking. And I really feel for Goltsov and Umalatov that had to put up with that. I don't know what the circumstances were. Have they done something previously in their lives that meant the visa was difficult to get? Was it something else? Was it diplomatic international relations? I have no idea. But that's a real kick in the teeth if you've had visa issues and that's why you can't fight for $1 million. That sucks. But in terms of the fights in general, there was a couple of upsets. There was the big one was Delano Taylor coming in. Beat Rory McDonald. Coming in late notice, did not make it to the semi-finals. I believe he might have been 1-1. Did not make it to the semi-finals officially. Comes in to replace Umalatov, who we just said had visa issues, and beats Rory quick. Like, quick. Just clipped him with a right hand that was... It looked a little bit Usman Masvidal-esque. It was, you know, he really hit him hard with that right hand. Rory went down, and again, first round finish. He's punched his ticket. And Delano Taylor, probably a few weeks ago, was thinking, oh, got to wait till next season for my career to get back on track. He's now one fight away from $1 million. And he'll be fighting.
Grab that opportunity, my son. Jesus.
But that's it. That's the thing with the PFL. Like, from some perspectives, you go, that sucks. Visa issues, all that stuff. And, you know, it makes you go, well, maybe this is why the UFC don't do tournaments. Because with injuries and other things, maybe the best of the best don't always, like, get through all the time, whatever. But having said that, you get situations like this that are real amazing stories. You were sat on your ass a few weeks ago thinking your season was done, and now you're one fight away from $1 million. That is crazy.
You're putting more emphasis on $1 million every time you say it.
Because it is, though. But again, we talk about fighter pay. They had the fighter pay purses come out last night, because in California, in the UFC, they have to declare their fighter pay purses.
Ooh,
Chito
on.
Vera walked away with 300 grand. That was show and win. And he walked away with 300 grand. Now, I know that it's a different format with the PFL, and they're probably not earning 300 grand every time they're fighting and all that stuff, although the pay structure, I think, is favourable to the fighters. But Jesus Christ, you're going to go, right, well, all you have to do is win 4 fights and you're a millionaire. That is something special. There's fighters in the UFC that are probably earning, I think Dominic Cruz earned something like 170 grand for last night's fight.
Really?
That's what the purse came out. Because again, he just got his show money. It's like these are top names.
It's Dominic Cruz.
So what are you earning if you are, I don't know, David Onama last night? If you're David Onama or even Nate Landwehr who won, let's scrap the 50k bonus for a second. I know that's an incentive. But what are you earning if you're them? 20 and 20? 40 and 40 at best?
This is the thing, and it's like, I don't know if it was when we was recording or not, but one of our early guests kind of broke down a bit about the pay structure. And you know, when you're at the kind of, on the sort of cusp of the UFC, or just, you know, just on your initial fights in there, you know, you're not, by the time you've paid for your camp and your travel, we heard it with Molly saying, like, you know, the brilliant things about fighting on the same card as Paddy is probably changed now, but it's the fact that, you know, that their coaches are there for both fights, so they can split the costs of, like, their accommodation and things like that, because they're all costs that are factored into it. And, you know, to say that, like, oh, I made 20 grand for a night's work, it's not a night's work. It's like, that's your whole camp, that's all got to be, but that's your job, and then that's also got to cover you until your next fight. And so it is up for discussion. And I mean, I know that it's been well documented. We've spoke about it lots on the podcast, and we're going to speak about it again a little bit more when we get on to 278. And should we talk 278?
We should, but just to let you know, Saleb Osaib beat Carlos Liao. He'll be fighting Delano Taylor in the final, the welterweights PFL. Ante Delia absolutely ran through Henan Ferreira. Henan Ferreira is like 6'8", and you're looking at him going, Jesus Christ, this guy's an absolute beast. And Delia, who's coached by Mirko Krokop, absolutely just took him down and smashed him to pieces inside the first round. It was quite devastating to watch. And he'll be fighting Mateusz Scheffel, who finished Juan Adams in the third round. The ref just kind of came in and saved Juan Adams. He didn't go down. It wasn't like an obvious stoppage, but I think the ref saw him and was just like, this guy's just going to get beat up for the remainder of this round. So he saved him. So that's your heavyweight final, Delia Scheffel, and your welterweight final, McDonald's Saleb Osaib in the PFL. And then London this Saturday will be the featherweights, Brendan Loughnane, and the women's lightweights, including Kayla Harrison as well. So that'll be happening
there. Lovely.
Shall we get on to UFC 278?
Yes. So let's start with Usman Edwards 2. Have you had a chance to go back and watch the first fight?
I did, yeah.
I mean, we should. I mean, I think it's important that we point out that, for those that don't know, that fight was, what, 2015?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Both fighters are completely different now.
So, yeah. One of the things I guess he's quite well documented, and anybody that follows, Usman's career, I mean, he's an incredible champ, devastating wrestler. But what we've obviously seen now is he's a devastating striker now, and we know that Rocky's a striker. But I don't necessarily think Rocky's a knockout artist.
No.
Like, if you go through his record, there's not many KOs on that. But what we see is lots of strikes, lots of movement. Just controlling the pace of the fight. Look what we saw against Nate. But I think it's really weird. We're Brits, so obviously we want to see Leon win. You know, he's had such bad luck, and he's now got himself, the shot, and it's, God touch wood, we're a week away, and it's all looking like it's on. But we've seen Kamaru Usman become a striker, a devastating striker. You look at what his jabs was doing to Gilbert Burns, like just jabs was like plonking Gilbert Burns on his backside, and then you watch the Masvidal fight, and it's like these aren't big looping right hands. It's straight right, bomb, done. And I think you got to give a lot of, not that he needs any more credit, but Trevor Whitman knows his shit. And I don't know. I'd be really interested to see who Leon's sparring with, who they're bringing in to replicate Usman in the gym. Like, how do you recreate that? Devastating wrestler. What I will say when watching back the first fight is Edwards' takedown defense is really good.
Yep.
And obviously that's 6 years ago now. 7 years ago, sorry. And he's only going to have evolved greatly as a fighter. So I do think that he doesn't look uncomfortable when he's on his back either. In that first fight, in the first round when he does get taken down, is it a triangle, I believe?
He tried to throw up a triangle, yeah.
Yeah. And so that was impressive. I want to see an upset. I want to see Leon get the belt. But personally, I think he's fighting one of the most, pound for pound greats at the moment, who just seems to be getting better and better on every fight. So I don't know. I think if I was a betting man, I'd put me fiver on Kamaru Usman. That's where my head's at. My heart, I want Rocky to take this. Where are you at, Mr. Harrison?
Yeah, I'm in a similar place.
What was that noise?
I don't know. What noise?
A little geek.
I don't know what that was. Didn't even realise it. It's just making involuntary noises now. That's a sign of ageing, isn't it? I literally just shifted in my chair. I don't even know where that noise came from. Could have been any orifice. My head. If I were to do, emotionally, I want Leon. I'm like you. I want Leon to win. And
how is he going to win?
Okay, if I'm talking about how Leon can win, I think I have to say that Kamaru is not going to be on point. And the reason he's not going to be on point is he's been distracted by all this stupid talk about fighting Canelo. And he clearly doesn't really want to fight like Leon Edwards. He wants like bigger money fights. Colby was a bigger money fight. Masvidal was bigger money fights. And he's now fighting a guy that's more dangerous than Masvidal for sure. Possibly more dangerous than Colby, we'll have to find out. But this is now a fight that is high risk, maybe not a huge reward for Kamaru.
Leon's not a superstar yet, is he?
No.
He's not a Covington or a Masvidal.
No. But he's a very, very good and very, very underrated fighter. And when you're the champion and you beat an underrated challenger, people just go, well, yeah, well, we expected you to win that. So I kind of wonder if Kamaru might have taken his eye off the ball a little bit. He's trying to fight Canelo, which is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. And that means he's not been fully on it in camp. And that could give Leon a chance, because Leon has got crisp hands. He's not got knockout power. No, but he's still got crisp hands. He's got great elbows inside on the clinch and all that stuff. And he's got a really good left high kick as well. There is a world in which he catches Kamaru Usman with something and Usman is rocked badly and Leon can finish him. That we can be living in that world. My head, though, comes up with all these reasons why that's probably not likely to happen, or at least confirms why Kamaru Usman will be a big betting favourite. Let's just, like, looking at Usman's record, look at who he's beaten. Covington ridiculous. Twice, Masvidal twice, Burns, Woodley before Woodley got, with all due respect to him, bit shit. Can I say that? I don't know.
I thought you was going to say something really profound there.
No.
Bit shit.
It's true. Like, Usman beat Woodley when Woodley was coming off of basically knocking out and submitting Till. Mm. And when Till was on a bit of a tear. Mm. That was the Woodley that Kamaru Usman beat. Woodley now, he's gone on to, you know, get knocked out by Jake Paul, for God's sake. So
Woodley's fighting Sam Alvey in BKB. I've just seen it announced.
Are you joking? So the thing is, that's very believable. But yeah, so... And he's beaten Edwards before as well. I know it was a different Leon Edwards, but it was also a different Kamaru Usman.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to ignore those facts. And then also looking at the pathways to victory. Yes, Leon can catch him with something, but the likelihood is that if Leon wins this fight, it's a 5-round, you know, stick and move, work the jab, light him up, defend the takedowns, all those kind of things, and he wins by a decision. That is the smart money on where kind of Leon Edwards wins this fight. Usman has, I think, multiple game plans in this fight. He might start this fight going, I'm just going to strike with Leon. Going to conserve my energy because I know Leon's got good takedown defense. I'm going to just strike with Leon. And you know what? I've got the power advantage. I hit harder than Leon Edwards did. I dropped Gilbert Burns with a jab. I sparked out Masvidal, who'd never been knocked out before. This is a guy with huge power in his hands, and under Trevor Whitman has really molded his striking into something really quite special. It's rudimentary in its kind of like jab cross kind of basic nature, but it's very, very good, even though it's kind of the basic striking kind of what's the word, like weapons that he uses, you know. He's not throwing spinning attacks and stuff like that, but it's still very, very good. And if that doesn't work for him, the striking doesn't work for him, guess what? He goes to his elite level wrestling and tries to put Edwards on his back. And do you know what? If that game plan doesn't work, he can revert back to Masvidal 1, where he just wins a battle of strength, because I think he's probably the stronger guy in this fight, pushes him up against the fence and creates a really boring foot-stomping fight where he just ekes out a really dull, dull decision. There's multiple ways that Usman can win this fight, which worries me for Leon.
So, I couldn't agree more. I think the only one, and I hope I'm wrong, you know, but I would definitely lean on what you just said about the only way Leon's going to win this is to strike, you know, economically and just use his striking abilities and just stick and move and stay out of the range of them big hands and just make sure he's wrestling, you know, his takedown defense is on point. But I'd love to see Leon, like you say, head kick knockout, something like that. It'd be amazing.
Happen. Leon's really good and really underrated. This could be Kamaru Usman's toughest fight yet. But at the same time, Kamaru Usman is the pound for pound greatest fighter on the planet as we speak. And it's tough. It's going to be a night for Leon. It's exciting, yeah. And I think Leon can do it. I just think, you know, It's not as he's not going to be the betting favourite. Let's put it that way.
Okay, Paulo Costa versus Luke Rockhold.
This is such a weird fight.
It's so weird. Like, so it's a light heavyweight.
Is it? It's not a middleweight.
185.
Yes, middleweight.
I thought this fight's at light heavy. I just thought this fight was. Or is it 185? I thought this was at light heavy.
Where have you seen that?
Maybe I'm just looking at Paulo Costa's scales.
It's going to be light heavy, even though it's just middle.
No, yeah, it is middle. He's 185. Yeah. I thought they were. He was fine. This fight was at light heavy. Don't know why, but I did. Anyway, I mean, the chances are Paulo Costa's going to come in at fucking mega weight anyway. And we see the return of Luke Rockhold, which has been, when he's not fought since, what, 2019? When he... was it 2000? Yeah, 2019, when he lost to Jan Blachowicz, when he got stopped in the second round. Just looking at his record here, obviously before that he lost to Yoel, and aside from a win over Dave.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
David Branch on the back of losing the belt to Bisping. I mean, he's fought some serious opponents. He's got most of them. Yeah, he really has.
I mean, he's got wins over Bisping, Jacare Souza, Tim Kennedy, Lyoto Machida, Chris Weidman, Keith Jardine. Like, he's got some really big wins on his resume. He was never quite the same after getting left hook larried by Bisping in their second fight. And then obviously Blachowicz, his last fight, broke his jaw with that legendary Polish power up at light heavyweight.
Yeah.
This is such a weird fight, man. Rockhold hasn't won a fight for 5 years. That's a long time. And he hasn't been in the octagon for 3 years. I do believe ring rust exists, and I think this could spell problems for Rockhold. Costa, though, when you look at Costa, I mean, he's become a bit of a joke, hasn't he? Blaming losing to Adesanya on the fact that he had a few glasses of red wine the night before they fought. Then the ridiculous debacle with Vittori saying, yep, 185. No, mate, can we make it 195? I'm not going to make 195. Can we make it 205? And Vittori, being a legend, was just like, this guy's a dick. I'm just going to fuck him up, whatever the weight is.
He's a fucking cunt. I think was his exact words post-fight.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were just getting really aggressive. I was wow. There's some meltdown.
Someone's tired. Someone stayed up and watched the fights last night and didn't get much sleep.
Jesus. Calm down, Whiffin.
No, that was the best bit, wasn't it? He won over the heart of the nation. And then in post-fight speech, just went, he's a fucking cunt. I thought, there you go. You've just fucking ruined that.
Yeah. I mean, Costa hasn't actually won a fight in 3 years either.
Yoel Romero in 19, yeah.
But I mean, and he didn't win in that Romero fight. Romero won that fight. I remember that fight, and I remember thinking, this is a Romero win, and they gave it to Costa. Other than that, his biggest win is Uriah Hall.
Yeah.
He's not
shout
really
out Uriah Hall. Retired this week as well, so shout out
yes,
Uriah Hall.
He did. He did. And but look, if Uriah Hall is like your best win, because I don't count the Romero one because I don't think he won that fight. And other than that, you got Johnny Hendricks when Johnny Hendricks blew up to middleweight when he was just like,
was,
I don't know. He
and
was,
I imagine,
he didn't want to be there.
He was on the slide at that point, Johnny Hendricks.
I mean, that was more than a slide. That was like he fell off a cliff. It was, it was really bad.
Bit rough.
You're the one calling people cunts, mate. What's happened to this
what?
Show?
It was the fact that my Italian accent was so bad. You just thought it was from Essex.
Yeah. But yeah, look, I mean, have you got a prediction for this? I think this is a really tough one to call because of the ring rust for both guys, really, but particularly Rockhold. And
there's so many things that I'm interested in. What's going to happen on the scales? Like, what's Costa going to come in at? I think like Luke Rockhold's always an interesting fight to see, fight to watch. Sorry, I don't know. You're actually sound like you're dying over there, mate. You're all right. Sound go down the wrong hole.
Yeah, mate. I was hoping you couldn't hear it.
Oh, he's not good. We've got a man down.
Medic.
So, what's been the deal with Rockhold? Has he been injured?
I think he's just taken a lot of time off, but also Blachowicz broke his jaw.
Mm.
So,
just looking at Paulo Costa and the pictures that come up. The fact that this guy could be fighting at middleweight is insane. He's huge. But yeah, I don't know. I always used to enjoy watching Luke Rockhold fight. I wouldn't say I was a huge fan of his, but I'm a huge fan of watching him throw question mark kicks at the bag. And if he can throw one of them and knock out Paulo Costa, I would absolutely be overjoyed. Because I'm not a fan of Paulo Costa. I think he's an absolute melt. And
he's on the list. Done,
well, God, you know, if you ever thought there'd be a melt list, Vettori would be on it. But he got overtook by Costa. And it was just grotty, that last outing. And some of the things I've seen on social media, I'm not a fan of. And, I can't really call it because I don't know. It's been so long for both of them, and what are you going to get out of Luke Rockhold? If you get, you know, a Luke Rockhold that's on point and he's looking to come and really, you know, showcase what he can do and put himself back in the mix of things, then, you know, we could, if we see a good Luke Rockhold, then we could easily see a win for him. And as you say, you know, you cast your eye over Costa's record, and apart from Uriah Hall and the kind of weird one with Yoel, he's not had that kind of super high level competition and experience that Luke Rockhold's very comfortable with. So yeah, it is a trying to kind of work out what's going to be the factors in that ring rust, experience and weight. Like, yeah, let's wait and see what happens on the scales. How do you see it go?
I really want Rockhold to win. I'd much rather Rockhold win than Costa, but I can see Costa just coming out and blitzing him and getting a finish within the first like 90 seconds. I can see Rockhold just chin. I don't know if it's there anymore. And I think Costa hits hard, and I just think one big hit and that's it.
We're talking Gustafsson style, just a few years out, comes back, just gets blitzed
a little bit. Yeah, that's my concern. Let's move on, because the next fight is fucking brilliant. Aldo versus Merab Dvalishvili. We mentioned it earlier because of what happened with Chito Vera and Cruz. This could be another
Sorry. Just before we get on with that, Luke Rockhold has said something this week about fighter pay, but it wasn't directly about the pay itself. So I just want to throw this in before we move on, because I thought it was really interesting. He was talking about fighter bonuses. Have you seen this?
No.
So he's saying, like, basically everything moves, everything, you know, inflation and the world moves on. 50 G's, when's it going to change? Like, why are we still fighting for 50 grand bonuses? Like, the UFC, from when they announced that it was going to be a 50 grand bonus, the income that the UFC and the growth in the UFC is not reflected in them bonuses. How long ago was Conor shouting 50 G's, baby? Like, a long time ago.
2015, 2014?
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, and look at what post-Conor, I guess. Look
at
what's
happened.
Oh, no,
but it would be like 2013, maybe even, actually, yeah.
Look at what's happened with the UFC. Everybody now knows what the UFC is, right? Everybody knows who Conor McGregor is. And that ultimately just means there's so much more money involved in this. And like, 50 grand to get something special, it's like, should that not be increased? Should that not, would that not kind of maybe silence some of the people that are really outspoken about fighter pay? Would that help? It can't hurt. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting that Luke Rockhold, who'd been out of the UFC for so long, coming back in, was already taking swipes at the bonus structure. And good on him, because I do think these fighters should speak up about, you know, their livelihoods and their income.
Yeah, I mean, that does make sense. I think rather than seeing, like, I mean, it'd be nice if the bonuses went up as well, but rather than seeing just the bonuses go up, I'd like to see just like you get 50 grand if you finish your opponent. It doesn't have to be like the best finish on the card to get it or something like that.
Yeah.
But like you get 50 G's for a finish.
Yeah.
I'd like to see something like that. I think that'd be nice because then it spreads out a little bit more. It can mean so much because you know that like the big fighters on the cards are usually the ones that can get the bonuses, and it would just mean more to those people on the prelims just starting out. And if you're like, hey, you might be fighting 10 and 10, but you might walk away with 70 grand if you get a finish, and that is not life-changing necessarily, but in the short term, that is hugely impactful to a young athlete trying to find their way into, you know, not having a day job and just focus on their sport of choice and all that kind of thing. So yeah, I think something like that could be a really good thing to do. But let's move
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
Aldo Mihrab.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it with Chito Dominic Cruz. This could represent another kind of like changing of the guard type fight if Mihrab were to beat Aldo. But it's a tall order. Aldo's record, I'm sure whenever Aldo fights, we pull up his record and we talk about it, but it is absolutely outstanding. And when you look at the people that Aldo has lost to, he's only lost to, I think, one fight like really early in his career that you can barely even count. Then McGregor, Holloway twice, Volkanovski. I mean, that's out. That's ridiculous. And then Peter Yan. I think that might be it. Oh, no. And Marlon Moraes. But again, bit like with Romero and Costa. I don't count that one because Aldo did beat Marlon Moraes. It doesn't say it on Tapology or on his record, but he did beat Marlon Moraes to the point where even Dana White gave Aldo a title shot off the back of it because everyone knew that the judges got that one wrong. So, yeah. That's it. McGregor, Holloway twice, Volkanovski, Yan. That's like, that's elite level fighters. That you all have been champions, and not just champions. Holloway is thought of as featherweight goat. Volkanovski is now thought of as the featherweight goat. McGregor, first ever two-time world champion, simultaneous world champion. Peter Yan, ex-world champion. He's not just losing to anyone. So for you to beat Aldo, if you're Mihrab Dvalishvili now, if you beat Aldo, you join an elite level of people that have done that, that have beaten him. And that means you're probably likely to at least fight for a belt, if not more likely become a champion. Is Mihrab that good? Can Mihrab become a champion?
How can he? How is he going to do that? Do you think it's going to be... Do you think it's grand game? Do you think it's jiu-jitsu?
Well, Mihrab's whole thing is pressure. Pressure, great cardio. He just presses forward, presses forward, presses forward. And then he will use his wrestling and his takedowns. That's what Mihrab is really, really good at. And I think it's scary for an opponent to see someone that will just keep blitzing forward at you and then try and get you down. He doesn't seem to take any backward step. But Aldo hits with a lot of power. And if there's one thing that's going to make you take a backward step, it's that. And when you look at when Marab...
Not just that. If someone's coming forward constantly and you're Jose Aldo, who throws some beast low kicks, if someone's coming forward and that weight's on that front foot...
Yeah, I can see Marab catching them or something and just that playing into Marab's favour. I think Aldo's better off sticking with the boxing and maybe throwing some knees up the middle or something like that. But when you look at Marab's fight with Marlon Moraes, who I think we all know is not as good a fighter as Jose Aldo, Moraes hurt him bad. I can't remember if it was like a head kick or I can't remember now, but he hurt him bad. And Marab was able to pull it back. But at one point you're like, oh my God, Marab could get stopped here. So he is susceptible to those strikes. And Aldo hits hard and has got elite level striking. It's going to be really interesting. I don't know which way this is going to go. I think gun to my head, I think I'd lean towards Aldo. But it's totally plausible for Marab to just bulldoze through Aldo and get a takedown and just land some really heavy ground and pound. But Aldo's got great takedown defense, so that's why I think I'm leaning towards Aldo. But it could go either way.
Yeah, I'm leaning on Aldo for this one. I think he's on a three fight tear and. Yeah, I think, where's Mirab ranked? He must be ranked quite a lot below Jose, surely.
I don't think he's that far below him, you know.
Right. But he, yeah, you know. Like,
Mirab is six, Aldo's third.
Third, yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't know. But it's, as we've mentioned so many times there, you also think, oh, you know, he's... Is Jose slowing down? He's 35. Like, you just think, how can he be 35? Like, yeah. he you know, he just feels like he's been around forever. But yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, spirits must be high in the Serra Jiu-Jitsu at the moment. You know, you've seen Sterling on an absolute tear, and yeah, I don't know. I think head. I think, no, I'm sticking with it. I think Aldo's got this.
Yep. I would lean Aldo, but I'm a really big fan of Marab. And if you haven't seen it, anytime Marab fights, I just want people to go and see this. There's this amazing clip on Instagram and probably some other places now where Marab Divashvili tries to jump into a frozen lake and cracks his head open, goes to the hospital to have stitches, but then returns to the lake with boxing gloves and headgear on and fights the lake. And it is fucking brilliant. It's absolutely hilarious.
That's got to freak out opponents, isn't it? I'm fighting this guy.
He fights lakes. He fights frozen lakes.
He beat it on a rematch.
Yeah, I know, he's 1-1 with Frozen Lakes. Right, the rest of the card, I mean, it's not got the intrigue that the other fights have. However, there are some bits to be interested in. Alexander Romanov is 16-0 heavyweight.
Yeah,
he is very, very good at his wrestling. He's got, I think it's that Greco-Roman wrestling style where he will lift up and suplex people like he's Kurt Angle or something like that.
Let me check something that'll make you laugh on this. I do believe foundation style of him, sumo.
Sumo? No.
Yep. His foundation style is sumo. I fucking love that.
But where have you found that?
Tapology.
Really? Well, there you go. But, I mean, he does pick people up and slam them down. And he's picking up heavyweights and doing it to them. Mm. His wrestling is really, really good. As I said, undefeated, 16-0. A lot of people are really high on him. But he's fighting Marcin Tybura, who has very, very good grappling. So I think this could be a really interesting test for Romanov. And if he comes through it, I think a lot of people will be looking over their shoulders and looking at Romanov and going, oh, I don't really fancy that guy. but we'll have to see if he gets through Martin Tybura. Have you got anything?
Who's obviously come off? Well, yeah, I mean, I just think Tybura's, you know, was on a nice streak. He, you know, he lost to Volkov, but previous to that, you know, he'd put away Walt Harris, Greg Hardy, Ben Rothwell, Spivak. Like, so he's, you know, he's not to be messed with. And
is it fair to say the Spivak win is the only one that's really aged well?
I guess so. But yeah, I suppose so. But
I mean, don't get me wrong. Anyone that beats Greg Hardy, legend for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, but yeah, absolutely.
It's not like you're going to come off wins like that and think, God, this guy's got to be in the top five soon or something, you know.
But aside from that, is there anything else we want to talk about on that card? Am I right in saying way down on the maybe Fight Pass prelims, Figueiredo, is that the brother of? It looks.
Yes, it is,
isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't. To be honest, I haven't really focused on the prelims. There's one more main card fight that's Tyson Pedro against Harry Hansucker. Yep. Pedro was, you know, one of those fighters that I think was probably rushed a bit too early in his career. Like, he's only 30 now, and he fought Villanueva and beat him recently after 3 years off. So he turned 27 and had 3 years off, and that was after, I think, some losses against people like Shogun Hua and OSP. I think he was rushed too soon. This is a guy with very little experience, but still got wins over Paul Craig and Khalil Roundtree in the UFC. That's not to be sniffed at. An interesting wrinkle for this fight as well is that Harry Hansucker is coming down from heavyweight. And Harry Hansucker was beaten by Taito Uvasa, who is the brother-in-law of Tyson Pedro. So maybe Harry Hansucker is going to look for some vengeance there.
Harry Hunsucker's a great name.
I know.
And nickname, Harry the Hurricane Hunsucker. Good luck with that one, Bruce.
He'll be doing his nice leg warm-ups again, like he was at the UFC London.
That was right in front of me as well, that was.
I'm so glad you got that video. There.
And for those that haven't seen it, I mean, I do think like a lot of the other organisations captured it on camera as well. But he was like, it was before the UFC London. And I just looked up and Bruce was right in front of me. And he just put one of his legs on the table and was just literally doing these kind of stretch lunges. And I just thought, this is incredible. I need to film this. He knew people were filming. He was just breathing it in.
Loving life. Well, as I say, I don't think there's a huge amount else that I'd be interested in talking about on this card. Have you got much else?
No.
Well, we're about to hit the hour mark, so I think we'll call it there. But as I said, it's been some great action this weekend. UFC 278, we're obviously rooting for Leon Edwards, but it's going to be a tall order. And then we shall see what happens after that. Fingers crossed that we have our second ever British UFC champion by
wouldn't
the end of next weekend.
Yes, we've had lots of your favourite British fighters on this podcast. They're all available in the back catalogue. Also, we've had some absolute killers on there as well from all over the planet. From Australia, we've had Volk, and we've had, who else we had from Australia? Dan Hooker.
New Zealand. Don't say same thing.
It's really offensive, isn't it, to get them two mixed up. Also, who did we speak to on Friday that are becoming very soon?
Oh, we had number 4th ranked featherweight in the UFC, Josh Emmett, who, you know, is coming off that win over Calvin Kattar. Slightly controversial. Some people thought it went Kattar's way. Some people thought it went Emmett's way, but the bottom line is he walked away with a win. I don't think it was a robbery at all. I think I may have even scored it for Emmett anyway. I'm trying to remember now, but it was a close fight. He walked away with the win over Calvin Kattar. There's discussions about him potentially having an interim title fight with Yair Rodriguez, because Volkanovski's going to be out with hand surgery, and then Volkanovski also likes the idea of moving up to 155. So there's a lot on the horizon for Josh Emmett, and not to mention, you know, our friend Arnold Allen as well is on a 9-fight win streak in that division. Where does he fit into it all? So we had a chat with Josh about his career today, what drives him, and also where he feels like he fits in this stacked UFC featherweight division at the moment.
Absolutely, and like Arnold, you know, they're the quiet guys in the top 10, and you don't generally get to hear too much from them. So it was really lovely to get to spend, a nice sort of 45 minutes with Josh, like finding out all about him. And it's a wonderful story, and he's such a nice guy. So subscribe now, and you won't miss that one when that comes out.
He saved a man's life.
I mean, he did.
Saved a man's life.
I mean, we ain't going to tell you any more about that because, I don't want to spoil it for you, but that's coming soon. We've mentioned Arnold. Arnold's been on a couple of times. Lovely human being, lovely guest. Go check out that back catalogue. We'll be back for Post 278. And in the meantime, we'll see you later.
Bye, guys.